5. In the course of the 4 war years from 1914 to 1918, I gradually lost all sense of what peace might be like. The memory of pre-war times slowly paled. I could not imagine a day without the army bulletins. Such a day would have been without its chief attraction. What else did life have to offer? One went to school, learned reading, writing, and arithmetic, and later Latin and history. One played with friends, one went out with one's parents. But was that a life? Life gained its thrill, the day its colour, from the current military events. If a great offensive was on, with a number of prisoners running to 5 figures, fortifications captured, and immeasurable gains of war material, it felt like the holiday season. There was an endless supply of food for the imagination, and life was grand, just as later when one was in love. If there were only tedious defensive operations, all quiet on the Western Front, or a strategic retreat carried out according to plan, then life was all grey. The battle games with one's friends lacked excitement, and schoolwork became twice as boring. Every day I went to a police station a few blocks from our house. There the army bulletin was posted several hours before it appeared in the newspapers. A narrow sheet of white paper on a notice board, sometimes long, sometimes short, covered with dancing capital letters, obviously produced by a very worn duplicating machine. I had to stand on tiptoe and strain my neck to decipher it. I did that every day, patiently and reverently. As I said, I no longer had any clear conception of peace, though I had some idea of the final victory. The final victory, the grand total that would one day be the inevitable result of all the many partial victories mentioned in the military bulletins, was for me what the last day and the resurrection are for a pious Christian, or the coming of the Messiah for a religious Jew. It was the stupendous climax of all those triumphant bulletins in which the numbers of prisoners, size of territory gained, and the quantity of booty outdid one another. What would follow was beyond imagining. I waited for the final victory with eager but timorous trepidation. That it would come was inevitable. The only question was what life could possibly offer afterward. Even in the months from July to October 1918, I still confidently expected victory, although I was not so stupid as to fail to notice that the army bulletins were getting gloomier and gloomier, and that my expectation defied reason. Well, had not Russia been defeated? Did we not possess the Ukraine, which would provide all that was needed to win the war? Were our armies not still deep in France? I could not fail to notice also that many, very many people, and indeed finally almost everyone, began to take a different view of the war from mine. Yet mine had originally been the common view. Indeed, it had become mine only because it was the common view. It was most exasperating that almost everyone seemed to have lost their taste for the war just then, when only a little extra effort was all that was needed to raise the army bulletins out of the mournful depression of enemy attempt to overrun our lines defeated and orderly withdrawal into prepared positions, and bring them into the brilliant sunshine of 30-mile advance, break through enemy lines, and 30,000 prisoners. Outside the shops, where I queued up for artificial honey or skimmed milk, my mother and the maid could not always spare the time, and I sometimes had to help out, I used to hear the women grumble and utter ugly words that showed their total lack of comprehension. I was not always content to listen. Sometimes I would speak out fearlessly in my rather high-pitched voice and lecture them on the need to hold out. The women would laugh at first, then begin to wonder, and sometimes become touchingly diffident and subdued. I would leave the field of verbal battle victorious, unself-consciously swinging a quarter litre of skimmed milk. But the army bulletins refused to improve. From October onward, the revolution drew near. Like the war, it approached with a flurry of new words and ideas, and yet, like it too, it finally came almost as a surprise. There the comparison ceases. The war, whatever one might say about it, was something complete in itself, something that came off, a success in its way, at least at first. One cannot say that of the revolution. footnote. The German Revolution started with a naval mutiny in the final week of October 1918. It spread across Germany and by November the 9th had forced the abdication of the Kaiser. In the spring of 1919, it was bloodily put down by the right-wing mercenaries, the so-called Freikorps, Free Corps, brought in by the Social Democratic government, usually led by ex-army officers and often supplied with army weapons. It has been of ominous significance for the later history of Germany that in spite of all the terrible misfortunes that the war brought, its outbreak was associated in almost everyone's memories with a number of unforgettable days of great exultation and intensity. While the Revolution of 1918, though it finally produced peace and freedom, only awakens dark memories in the minds of most Germans. The very fact that the war began in brilliant summer weather and the revolution in cold, wet November fog was a severe handicap for the latter. Well, that may sound ridiculous, but it is nevertheless true. The Republicans felt it later themselves. They never really wished to be reminded of November the 9th and have never celebrated it. The Nazis, who countered November 1918 with August 1914, always had an easy victory. Though November 1918 meant the end of the war, husbands restored to wives and life restored to men, it recalls no sense of joy. Only a bad mood, defeat, anxiety, senseless gunfights, confusion and bad weather. I myself saw little of the actual revolution. On Saturday the papers announced that the Kaiser had abdicated. I felt somehow surprised that there was so little fuss. It was just another newspaper headline, and I had seen bolder ones during the war. Incidentally, he had not yet abdicated when the headlines appeared, but as he soon did so, that was not very important. The fact that the very next day, on Sunday the 10th, our newspaper was suddenly called Die Rote Fahne, the Red Flag, instead of Tägliche Rundschau, Daily Review, gave me a much greater shock than the headline Kaiser Abdicates. A group of revolutionary printers had apparently demanded the new name. The contents were, however, little changed. A few days later, it reverted to Tägliche Rundschau. This small detail is emblematic of the revolution of 1918 as a whole.